Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning to you all, wherever you are. Thank you for listening to us. As I mentioned, my name is Sam Dosa. I'm the host of my podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa, which is available on iTunes, Spotify, and all other platforms. Take a pick and choose my podcast because I bring so many amazing guests around the globe and they become my family. Today is another exceptional soul, a guest. Her name is Ariana Zabisky. She is an associate marriage and family therapist, a clinical psychology doctoral candidate. Wow. Okay. And she has developed this psychology and human development family studies in 2014 and her master in marriage and family therapy in 2019. She has been on a journey of doing great things in her life. So why don't we just invite her to have a great chat with me about her journey and how that is helping and her website, which she is going to share with you. It's quite interesting because I don't want to spill the bean now because I won't let her spin the beans with you. So, Ariana, welcome to my show, Chai with Sam Dosa.
Thank you so much, Sam. I really appreciate you having me on your podcast.
The pleasure is all mine. So, who Ariana is and what is her purpose?
Yes, gosh. And when I think about my purpose, I think about it in so many different areas. I think about it on the individual level, right? Like I feel like I do a lot of good healing work with clients, if I could be so bold to say, on the individual therapy level. But then also there's a greater level, maybe like a collective level. Mm-hmm. Where I advocate for mental health. And part of what I'm advocating for right now is advocating for understanding mental health and trauma for people in the life coaching and personal development industry. Mm-hmm. But that's honestly just one step. There's another step that I'm working on right now with another therapist friend of mine. Mm-hmm. We're creating a mental health crisis management training program for teachers in the K-12 school districts. And then another step, another tier of that I would love to create, you know, sometime next year is I'd love to create a training program for families and parents to better support what happens when someone in your family is impacted by, you know, things that are going on in the world or things that are going on personally. And how can you support someone who's showing certain symptoms and signs that they're feeling depressed or they're going through certain life challenges?
Wow. You've got so many great things in pipeline at the moment, and I think it's going to bring a lot of things to a lot of people who are take on board that sort of training with you and your colleague to understand, because there is a still a myth or does not fully understand that the life coaches do not hold any significant experiences to deal with those traumas or to deal with those people who are going through with quite a severe depression or severe things, and sometimes people not knowing coaching them and not realizing that they are not entitled for that. And in so what you are doing, you are giving them tools to identify those people so they can direct them to the right faculty, correct?
Exactly. But there's also another piece of this that I'm advocating for. I'm advocating for them also to be more empowered to support clients through certain situations. So recognizing the flags, because it is a bit of a fine line of when someone needs to be referred to a mental health professional. So helping them, you know, feel more empowered, have more tools, but then also know the really clear distinction of when one needs to refer out. And then one more aspect of that that I'm advocating for is looking at collaboration. So this would mean that you wouldn't necessarily refer out and then get rid of the client, that you would actually refer out but keep the client and continue to collaborate with a mental professional on their work together so that you can do your work with them more effectively as well. So that's a bit of a new concept that I haven't heard other therapists or mental professionals talk about much, but it's really the concept of integrative medicine, right? Integrative care. But of course, although personal coaches, life coaches are not mental health or, you know, medical professionals, I do think that it could be beneficial to add them to an integrative care model where we all work together to support the client in what, and the client has that choice, right? The client has free will to choose how their healing happens. And if they bond with a coach and they're feeling very supported by this coach, then sure, let's bring that on as part of their care plan.
It's quite a significant initiative, I would say. And it will actually open doors for a lot of people to come and work in this industry. And with this present situation with COVID-19, a lot of people are going through with uncertainty in their life. And as you said, you know, people are attracting a lot of people to work with them. But then understanding the nitty-gritty of other areas of therapies, other areas of mental health, other areas of coaching skills, it's quite important for you to have a great toolbox. But again, you have a collaborative partners with whom you can back and forth with the ideas going forward with your client. And it's work hand in hand, I guess, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That's beautiful. So give us a little bit about your own journey, because when we last spoke or prior to this recording, as I did an introduction to each other, I heard a really interesting story about you being in Paris, you being in different part of the world. Would you please share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see, I am originally from Aspen, Colorado. I was born in Aspen and I grew up in the valley there. And I moved around Colorado quite a bit, and I moved back and forth between Aspen and Denver twice with my family. And then I ended up going to Colorado State University in Fort Collins. And I studied abroad in Aix-en-Provence, France. And I loved France so much. I'm actually a dual citizen of France. My dad is French. And oh, wow. So it was really this beautiful eye-opening experience coming back to what felt like my roots. I grew up with my French grandmother, with a lot of influence from her. And it kind of felt like this strange thing, like starting to finally understand a piece of myself that I only got glimpses of when I got to visit my grandma. So it was a really great experience. And then after I finished college, I decided I really wanted to go live abroad. So I moved to Paris, and I was there for just under a year. And I was living there when the Charlie Hebdo terrorist attacks happened. It happened really, really close to where my apartment was, actually. And it was very frightening. And I kind of had this this moment that I realized, if I were to die today, would I be satisfied? Would I feel like all the loose ends were tied, you know? And the reality of it was that the answer was not yes. I felt like I had unfinished business, and I didn't want to be so far away from my parents. So I decided to move back to the States shortly after that. Mm-hmm. And I actually moved in with my mom, and I hadn't lived with her since previously to high school, actually, because in high school I moved in with my dad when she moved to California. So then I got a chance to kind of finally tie up this loose end that I had with my mom. And it was really great and really healing for our relationship. And then I started working in study abroad, and I got a job at the school that I studied abroad with in Aix-en-Provence. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that they had just moved their campus, their office of admissions to San Diego. Wow. And I worked there. Yeah, I was very lucky. So then I got to start working and study abroad, and I got to advocate for this wonderful school that I had a really great experience at. And so then a couple of years went by, and I felt this like this really deep calling to return to psychology. It's what I studied in undergrad, and I was kind of avoiding going back to school. I didn't really want to go back to school, but I had this deep knowing in my heart that something was missing, you know, that I wasn't fully answering my call. And I'm so glad I listened, because it's shaped so much of my life now, and really feels like it's my soul's mission. And so I went back for my master's in marriage family therapy, and I continued working full time, which was obviously an interesting experience, but a good one at that. And I loved studying it so much that I went on for my doctorate. And one thing I will say is that when you're doing graduate studies on something that you really, really love, at least from my experience, the education is actually quite enjoyable. I found it to be a lot more enjoyable than my undergraduate studies. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. If anybody's listening to this thinking, oh, yeah, it's actually a very rewarding experience thus far. Mm-hmm.
So I think what I felt like that you are academically quite in tune with your inner voice, and it's giving you a quite open path to achieve the way you want to achieve things in life, and that's what has been happening to you. So mm-hmm. So going forward now is you are now creating workshops for people, or workshop for regards to mental health and a couple of other things which you are recording the pipeline right now. Go for it.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, there was some pretty significant life events that happened to me, which sure. then sparked me to kind of go onto my own entrepreneur journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing that I've learned about becoming an entrepreneur is it is both the most audacious mm-hmm. and freeing, amazing thing I probably have ever done in my whole life. It's and I don't think I would have ever done it mm-hmm. if it weren't because I absolutely felt like I had to. And the reason I felt like I absolutely had to is my first semester of my doctoral program, mm-hmm. I became pregnant, not on purpose. And I was really faced with this, like, just shock of, oh my gosh, I felt as if I was watching my dreams just go out the window, you know? Mm-hmm. And it did not work out with the father of my child. And so, and I found that I realized that after just a few more months, and then it was really quite shocking, because then I was faced with this choice of, do I crumble or do I rise? And it felt like crumbling a lot of the time, but then I would get glimpses of what it felt like in the rising. And the rising part was expanding my idea of what was possible and realizing that the only person stopping me from that was me, that my own limiting beliefs was the only thing getting in the way, that I had all the tools that I needed. And so then I actually had already done a few speaking events to coaches on this topic, but I had never thought I would make a business out of it. I was simply doing favors for friends who trusted me to speak to coaches on this topic of the differences between therapy and coaching, and how to make, you know, more responsible choices around the distinctions of the fields. And then I realized, oh my gosh, this is such a great niche. I should go into this. I should make a business around this. And I needed to support my daughter, and I needed to be able to stay in my doctoral program. And I needed to be able to also have some free time and be able to spend a fair amount of time to raise my daughter, but also, you know, financially support us. And that's exactly what this business gave me. And it was scary. And I was launching it 1 month after she was born. Wow. And it was very intense. Yeah, I was getting up very early. I would get up before she would wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, okay, I will, dare I say it, I was one of those people that got very lucky with a good sleeping baby.
Mm-hmm.
But it's maybe because she knew I needed it. She was like, okay, mom, here you go. but yeah, so I was getting up very early before she would get up, and I would be working on my business, or after, late at night after she'd go to sleep, I'd be working on my business. And
mm-hmm.
and I got it launched, and then the ideas keep flowing from there. There's so much that comes after that, and it is audacious as hell. I will say that this entrepreneurship journey has been intimidating and audacious, but man, is it rewarding when you get there, when you get something launched like that. It's really exciting.
Must be the jubilation and the fire and this all sorts of emotions going through with you,
mm-hmm.
seeing this, like you already had a baby and mm-hmm. then you created another baby as your business.
Yeah.
So it's like you are carrying two babies together, and you are like, wow, superwoman, or I'll say. So what a phenomenal journey you took. And I think because you have that, I'm a proud father of my three biological daughter, and I have two stepdaughters. So I have five daughters and with my wife. So six women in the house, and I'm the man.
Oh.
Yeah. And then we have a dog. So that means my biological children live with their mother. And I have two daughters, my stepdaughters and my wife. So three girls and two male energies in the house. So it still settles the energy down in the house. Why I'm saying that? Because I think woman has big responsibilities in the society. Because you take not only childbearing, but then again, that's one area. Even we as men have been told that, oh, you are the special one in the household, is in the society, in the business, or in the corporate environment. But what I have seen is that woman has to do threefold extra to present themselves in the society, or in front of a man-dominated world. And what you have shown, what you have done, is exceptionally beautiful. Because this is the story a lot of women want to hear. You each and everybody, whether man or woman, each and everybody have that tenacity within themselves, the gifts within themselves. It's about how they can actually invoke those gifts to show them that they can be the right person, or they can be the right on the right track for in their career or in their relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of that, I'm just like reflecting on my own inner guidance, and I think a lot of that was propelled by my spirituality. And I think my spirituality, in my perspective, gave me a lot of resilience and gives me a lot of resilience to push forward in really, really challenging situations.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's that opportunity to not look at the experience on a human level, which is easy to do, right? Like the human level is, why is my situation of motherhood look so different than everyone else's around me, right? Like, why do I have to do this alone? Why am I faced with such hard decisions around me and my daughter, and how I'm going to make this work? And but when I zoom out and look at it from a soul level, right? I then am able to tap into a completely new way of looking at it, as this is the journey that my soul chose, right? And that And this is what resonates with me. So I don't know if this resonates with everyone listening, of course, it might not. But what resonates with me is that I find comfort in recognizing that there's something bigger at work. And that when I tap into the calling, when I tap into what does my soul want me to learn about this experience, all of a sudden things become a lot more clear. And I'm able to shift perspectives that need to be shifted to be able to push forward and continue to excel in ways that I need to be able to accomplish this mission, this message that must be spoken, right? Or must get out in some which way or form.
Very true, very true. I think everyone, when they dive into those sort of consciousness, they will given an opportunity to see things differently, life differently. But it's the choice. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a choice. And a lot of people says, oh, well, I was never being given this opportunity, that opportunity. But the universe gives you the opportunity to achieve the better of yourself, be a better person or better version of yourself. But how many, because we are conditioned. The famous statement I use in my podcast or in my speaking gig is that we are born to win, but conditioned to fail.
If you
look at this way, that we were like you say, okay, we were fighting millions of sperm to conceive into mom's, so she got pregnant. So the egg fertilized because that one sperm got through in that fight to be presented, and you came into this world. So you were the winner, or first winner to be in this world. But we started to get conditioning after 5 years or 6 years or seven, because we get bigger and bigger, and the people start to talk to us like in a different way. The way you communicate with your child, the way the father communicates with the child is completely different. Our words, the way we articulate our words, the way we convey our words. If I say to you, Ariana, do this, or if I will say to you, Ariana, would you like to do this, or would you prefer this way? So there is a two different way to articulate or two way to say things to people, correct? Especially children. And children actually absorb a lot of things. By the time they are seven, they're absorbing a lot of things. After seven, everything started to shift with them. So they have been conditioned already. And you go into your teenager, then you go into your youth, and then you become so conditioned that you never remember that how happy you were when you used to be very young. Do you laugh out loud without people noticing you? And when you go older, you started to keep a hand on your mouth to when you are laughing so nobody can see you because it's embarrassing. See, we've been conditioned to so many things. And I think as a parent, this is our responsibility. I was reading this and somebody says that as a parent's responsibility is to look to make sure that they give their children the right values to grow. And when they are grown up to that age where they start going to work, they hand over those children to those people to look after them, because their values has to be continued. But when they go into that world, they are being conditioned more. So they're completely forgotten what their values were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This reminds me, I recently heard this concept around homeschooling and how homeschooling is teaching your children how to be students of life. Okay. And I think about that every time I bring my daughter. She's 6 months old. So every time I bring her to do things, our routine every Saturday or Sunday is we go to the beach. I take her to the beach. I live in San Diego, so you know, I definitely like to enjoy some of that benefit of having the beach year round. And I take her there, and I notice now her eyes observing all of what's around her and me in total bewilderment, you know? I mean, and it's the most beautiful thing I think I've ever seen. It's like, it's really cool because what it allows me to do too is I feel like I'm re-experiencing the beauty of life through child's eyes. Like I watch her seeing the ocean and watching it with such awe, and she could sit there and stare at it forever, you know, and I take her and we put our feet in it and she stomps around in it, and just observing her observing the world is so incredibly invigorating, because all of a sudden it's like there's a totally new lens for me to experience the world in too. I think that's been a really cool eye-opening thing. And now I purposefully, you know, get excited about taking her out and about and taking her to, and granted, it's a pandemic, so it is kind of exciting when we get to get out of the house sometimes, but, you know, even just like when she goes to her pediatrician appointments, or even when we go to the market or things like that, you know, it's shifting that into saying, this is such an exciting moment, because now I get to experience this with her, which is a really exciting thing and a new thing. Yeah. So
I think this is quite fun. Absolutely. I remember the young time, or when the time when my daughters were growing up, I spent as much as time I can, because now they remember everything. Because they remember that I used to take them for tree climbing, I used to take them in the rain, and then they remember all those time, because I think I spent more time because that was the time when they want to bond with their father, see that who's standing by them, and that's quite important for parents to create that bond, because as children will grow older, but they will always remain children. Even though they are going to be 40 years or 50 years or in front of us, they are always going to be remaining children. They are going to be grow older than us. So I think it's a responsibility of the parents how you build your relationship with your children. Because children are so, I would say, they are naive, but they are also very clever. They are very clever, as the thinking process is completely different. Because I remember my childhood, we were not being taught critical thinking. We were never been taught to think outside the box, because the way we were being brought up, it was completely different. But now the children are thinking outside the box. They are looking at what are the possibilities, and they are aware that we are in a completely different arena. The careers which they are going to be choosing right now, are they going to be long-lasting career for them or not? Some people have some insight, but a lot of our youth are still completely oblivious to a lot of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think another aspect to that, and this kind of relates back to the, mental health crisis management training that I'd like to offer parents. I mean, that's kind of a fancy name for it, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, it's talking about recognizing what comes up with you when you begin parenting? Because I can attest that becoming a parent is definitely one of the most developing opportunities for my own humanness. Mm-hmm. It's that opportunity where you're recognizing so many different wounds that you had been able to ignore for a long time. So many things come up for healing when you become a parent. And so kind of what you're talking about, like even just paying attention to the way you verbalize things to your children is so important, because you can either foster their curiosity and their growth, or you could hinder it. And there's a really important distinction. And having the insight into how to word things in a way that could foster curiosity and growth, and even getting curious. If you're getting triggered about them resisting something, well, let's, instead of wanting children to fall in line and do as we say with every step of the way, can we find a way to celebrate the resistance in a healthy way, right? So obviously it would be mayhem if there was no structure. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that It's like when you have a young child turn to you and say no, you're celebrating them using their voice in a way that was never previously accepted. Mm-hmm. And you can celebrate and say, okay, I hear your perspective. Can I teach you my perspective in why we're doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, like taking that extra moment, and it may take longer than a moment, so I'm not going to pretend that this is easy, because, you know, I haven't been there myself quite yet. My daughter's only 6 months, but I can imagine that it's not always easy to take that time to slow down a bit and really express your perspective and explain rather than dictate, rather than suppress.
True, very true. I think what I would recommend to the parents, newly parents, or the parents who are going to be, or who are already parents, they started to a practice of mindfulness. Because young toddlers, especially young children, very young, because they actually read emotions of their children or the emotion of their parents. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say, for example, you wake up early in the morning before she gets up, and then she gets up, you are focused on her. When she's having a nap, you're thinking, oh, okay, let me get have a nap. If you're not taking a nap and you're continuously working, you started to lose your concentration, you started to feel fatigue, you started to feel under stress. And that when those emotions will be transmitted to her, to your children. Mm-hmm. And they will feel, oh, mom is or dad is stressed. That make more stressful situation. I'm going to start crying without any concern. I'm going to start crying because I'm just picking up that she or he is stressed. So let's do that. So that's where the things started to shift for a lot of parents, and they started to feel completely drained. The scenario mm-hmm. is like you are a mother. You just delivered a baby. Your husband is with you for 2 weeks as a leave, as a parental leave. For example, mm-hmm. and after two mm-hmm. weeks, he's decided to go back to work. Well, in this scenario with COVID-19, he can't run away at the moment. But so in the previous time, husband has to leave the house, leave the mother, leave the children at home, go to work, and he spent 7-6 hours at work, and then come home and expect food to be ready. Child has to go to sleep. That he has time to himself for a little while, having his drink or something while he's in his cave before he come out mm-hmm. from his cave. And mm-hmm. then he started to check with the wife that how she's doing. But things are changing. And
yeah.
as a man has to understand that it's not one man. If she wanted to have a child, she would have gone to the sperm donor bank. You would have got the sperm from there. When you are in a relationship, you are working together as two people, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
you do have to work together as a team. And I understand mother will be thinking of, oh, no, I don't want to put a stress on my husband. He just came from work and I better do this and do that. But
I think not anymore.
Not anymore, because you, as a mother, you're going through the phases like feeding, changing, doing all sorts of things in the house. You're not getting enough time to yourself. Yeah, and then you start thinking yourself, oh, how ugly I look because of my pregnancy. I put on so much weight. I can't see myself in the mirror. My husband doesn't like me anymore. So many things are going in, and your hormones are playing different roles as well, because you're going through with postnatal depression, if there is some.
Mm-hmm.
So I think man has to understand. And this is again, goes through the relationship or parenting and how two people work together. It would be an ideal for parents to learn this before they start thinking of becoming a parent, I think.
Yeah. It's hard for me to fathom what it would be like to do this with a partner. That was not an option for me.
I
had to make, but you know, it's beautiful to hear you talk about this. And it's very healing, I think, for me to hear about that, the other side of that. And I think that you're right, that there's a lot of things that are shifting right now. And I think women are getting to the point where they they do want to vocalize the frustration and the feelings of overwhelm, and them also trying to manage their careers as well with everything.
Yes.
And it's getting to the point, I think, where there is confusion around the level of work it takes to raise children and maintain that. And, you know, I think I was talking to a colleague about this recently, and, you know, she's navigating working full time. She has two kids at home, and she said it's really challenging, but she said that because of COVID-19, her husband is there all the time. And so there's actually a new level of understanding that's happening, which I think is really powerful. And I think that that's so important in the growth of our society. And, you know, there's been a lot of times where I felt really exhausted in this process. And I wonder if it would feel any different if I actually had a full-time partner with me doing it. And the answer is, honestly, I don't think so. I'm imagining, like, if I had a full-time partner, in theory, they would be working all day. And I also notice naturally, just because of breastfeeding, you know, my baby, she needs me all day long. And she was pretty resistant to taking the bottle. So I was thinking about it and I thought, well, actually, I don't even know if this would have been much different. And when I hear, I talk to a lot of my mom friends who are in partnerships, and they have a lot of similar feelings and feelings of overwhelm that I do. And they have a full-time partner at home. And I realized that, gosh, this is just, it's just hard to raise kids regardless. And I think that, honestly, if we're looking at where this challenge is coming from, it's a systemic problem, because our society is organized in a way that's not incredibly supportive to families. And that's something that I think is still, there's a lot of room to navigate, because one thing that I'm part of this mom's networking group, it's a nationwide networking group called HeyMama.co. It's really cool. I love it. But we do a lot of virtual events, and we've been talking a lot about this, how there honestly needs to be an entire shift in the expectation of humans raising families. I mean, it's just not reasonable what we're trying to get our people who are raising families to operate the exact same way in work, in life, as people who are not raising families. And I don't know what the answer looks like. I haven't thought about too much about what ideally it would look like, but maybe even just more flexible hours throughout the day for both mom and dad, and it not be restricted to a maternal thing, but it be restricted to I'm a parent and I'm actively parenting, and that is where I need flexibility, you know?
I think each and every career has a different criteria to choose from. But this also depending on two people. When they are planning to have a baby, they must have thought about it in one angle. But sometimes people go through with an entirely different journey. And when you think about it, a lot of people say, oh, well, I got a family around me. My mom lived down the road. My dad lived down the road. Or my cousin lived down the road, and so it's not a problem. For me, especially for me, my mom, well, my parents were abroad. I was the only one in the UK. And it wasn't a very good journey in regards to I have to hire au pairs to live with us, support us, because we had three children. And I was full-time in work. My ex-wife was doing full-time studies or part-time work. So we were trying to juggle a lot of things, and it affects a lot of things. And one has to understand that this is a two people union. Okay. Some people are going through with their own journey, and people take that responsible fully on themselves, correct? So it's a personal choice. It's a personal choice. And but if you have a partner who understands you, you are a luckiest person, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think bringing two people together. I understand, you know, my marriage broke down after 17 years. 17 years I spent in the marriage. My marriage broke down. But I had no regrets on that. You know, life has to move on with life, correct? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and I found a new partner and she understands me and I understand her. So you always go on to that journey and have to have a right a partner for your journey. And mm-hmm. we all go through. But if you have a partner who have a respect each other on the same vibration, then you are the luckiest person, luckiest man mm-hmm. and a woman in the world. And that's what a woman looking for, correct? And that's the man looking for, a woman who understand man and man understand woman. And we have been told that we are from Mars and women are from and those sort of a storytelling things are being done. And there is some things are there. Yeah. I'm not saying there is nothing unbiased about it. But then again, men are being given a precedent on everything. Yeah. Oh, well, if you have a boy, you are superior. And I said to a lot of people said, oh, you got girls. I said, what's wrong with it? I'm the luckiest man. I got 3 girls. They are exactly like boys, more better than boys.
You know, it's funny you say that because I've actually had many of my friends have babies and mm-hmm. a lot of them said that they preferred to have girls, that they really wanted a girl. And there was even a couple situations of friends who found out they were having boys or people I know that were having boys and they were actually kind of disappointed. Mm-hmm. And I actually found this to be quite concerning, not for them, right? Like on a systemic level, you know, the whole like girl dad movement, for example. Mm-hmm. But I think raising boys is such, it's equally as important, right? And it's almost like the pendulum has swung the other way and almost like a little bit too far over, right? Like mm-hmm. there should be this this emphasis on getting to raise a human to be exactly who they are and who their soul is meant to become, you know, like, and having obviously less emphasis on being attached to the gender, because that's obviously not, you know, you might not know if your child identifies a different way as they get older, things like that. But recognizing that, my gosh, you know, there is so much importance in raising both a boy and a girl. I think why a lot of people now are feeling so excited about having girls is mm-hmm. it gives them the opportunity to tap into the feminine, to tap into the softness, to tap into the patience, the kindness, the love in a way that's so caring and supportive. And I think it's what a lot of people in our society are craving, is to tap more into the feminine energy. And my thing here is that why can't we also do this with a boy, right? A boy being born, how he can learn both the feminine and the masculine. Like, for example, one of my younger cousins, he loves to bake, you know, and his other brothers love sports, but he loves to bake and cook with his mom. And I remember thinking as a younger person, I was so intrigued on how there was so much emphasis on him baking. His mom really supported him in nurturing this interest in baking and cooking and helping in the kitchen, whatever that looked like. And as I've got older and grown in my own perspective, I realized how incredibly brilliant she was in that she nurtured this slowness, this softness, this let's slow down. We're going to cook. We're going to use our hands. We're going to think critically about what we want to make and take pride in preparing something that normally would be seen as a feminine role, but now it's seen in an evolutionalized way as something that's for everyone, which is beautiful. And I think really freeing in my cousin, who is a boy, who then was allowed to be his most authentic self and given permission to be his most authentic self. Mm-hmm.
The things which you are sharing over here is quite appropriate and in really great depth. That with boys, we have been told from the childhood that you are a man, you are a boy, you mm-hmm. shouldn't be crying, you shouldn't be yeah. like a baby, you shouldn't be a sissy, or you shouldn't be. You're putting those names, and boy yeah. has no way of articulating. So what we are doing as a man, we suppress everything. And this goes into another discussion. It's going to be a longer discussion about you are suppressing your emotions, and mm-hmm. you are suppressing your emotions, and that comes out in your frustration as like anger, and then you are feeling no worthy of anything because you mm-hmm. have so much so oppressed that people look at you and you say, oh, look at that. Look at this guy. He does not have a understanding of how a man looked like. And people, a woman also put them into a completely different box as well when he become an adult and he can interact with the woman. And this is, oh, you are not a man. You are, so I have a friend who lives in Mauritius at the moment. He's a Kenyan born, settled in Canada, and now he's settled in Mauritius. And he's finding very difficult to match with a woman at the moment. He's almost 37 years old. He got everything. Money is not a problem. He's a very emotional person. And he's a very caring person. And he wanted to do everything for the woman, for whoever he meets. But the woman look at him like a very naive person or very emotionally charged person. And they want to have somebody who is rough, tough, a person to come along with that in their relationship. And he's like, you know, he take care of a woman. He take them out for dinner. He look after them. He pamper them. But women look at him like, you can be a friend, but you can't be my partner for future. And then he asked me the same question and said, what I'm doing wrong, Sam? Don't a woman want somebody to love them, to look after them? And I said to him, you're doing everything right, but I think sometimes women want somebody to be rough, who just use them, abuse them, and then they will realize that, oh, I'm in a wrong relationship.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think it's also like repeating cycles, right? Like oftentimes people look for what feels familiar. And so someone being nice and caring and loving like that and consistent maybe doesn't feel familiar, but also recognizing what is coming up in the own pattern for that friend around maybe searching for people who are not able to feel comfortable with that type of love, that there might be a pattern repeating on both sides of that, you know.
That's right, because
that it's very complex.
Mm-hmm. It is because he's saying, Sam, I'm doing everything. I'm trying to win, not winning as such a word. I'm just trying to show that how a much caring person I am, and mm-hmm. there is no vendetta behind it. I just wanted to, you know. Because I think everybody goes through their own journey. As you said, you know, people look at this as a mirror sometimes and says, what is behind that big smile, or what is behind that caring and sharing and everything? There must be something. Correct? Because we have gone through with so many ourselves heartaches, and we can't see the truth. We can't see the honesty sometimes. And sometimes honesty has been presented to you, and then you says, no, I have previous episodes in our life. I have to bring those episodes in front to analyze it, whether this is the truth or this is not the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really does take so much evaluation and self-reflection to explore the levels. But I agree with you that there's a lot of confusion around the balance of the masculine and the feminine, I believe. And even I myself am trying desperately to navigate this, because I feel that as I've launched into entrepreneurship, I've deeply embodied the masculine. Mm-hmm. I've embodied the masculine in how I approach business, how I approach clients, how I approach my trainings and my teachings and talking about it. And actually, something I've been working on with a new mentor of mine is how to tap into the feminine. And it's kind of strange to do, because it's hard for me to, when I think of an entrepreneur, I think of a man. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite literally mimicking how I've seen entrepreneurs run their business or operate recruitment and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm operating in that same way, but it's exhausting to me. It doesn't feel in full alignment when I operate my business in the masculine, and I'm trying to find the balance, and it's challenging. And so then I think this gets a bit lost as well, like with dating. A lot of my friends will say, you know, I wish men would just man up or step up. And although I have heard some men talk about this, that there is a lot of kind of sitting back and I guess you could just say, like, I don't know, maybe some new gender roles are kind of being evolved right now, as things in our society are changing. And I think we're all just trying to still figure out how to do it, you know, and it's not an easy thing to navigate.
Yeah. It is not an easy thing to navigate, but that's why, like coaches, like I do relationship coaching, I do work with people who are going through this journey, where they are mm-hmm. finding it difficult to articulate to their partners how to articulate, searching for somebody who is right in right frame of mind. Because if you are open to listening, if you're open to accepting your shortcomings, then you can go further. If you are stuck with your nonsense, you are not going to go any further. Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where I draw line. I said, listen, guys, this is where you are stuck right now, you know. Woman shows there is a big a big facade, that they are very strong and everything, but behind that they are looking for somebody to love them, to understand them. I use this analogy of communication between two husband and wife. So husband has been through, he came from work, and then a woman has been sitting at home looking after children, or doing her own bits and bobs as well, or are going to work. Even though they have no children, they are working together and in a completely different industry. They come home and they're still talking about work. So what husband is trying to do is he's trying to fix everything for her. And what she's trying to do is then asking him to just to listen. And that's where they started the problem, created the problem. And so her wife says, well, you never listen. And I'm listening. And she says, but I want you just to listen, not to fix my problem. I know how to fix my problem. So that's where, again, the problem starts to occur in a lot of relationships, that people are not listening. And that's where a lot of relationships breaks up, even whether they are girlfriend and boyfriend, or they are long-lasting relationship, they break down because men think that he knows the answers to everything. And women want somebody just to listen. And that's why women have a lot of friends where they just go and talk and say, you know what, thank you for listening. I just want somebody just to listen. I have the solution to my problem, but I just want somebody to listen.
Well, and I think half of that too is about having the community, right? I mean, mm-hmm. not all women have that community.
True.
And remembering that your partner can't fill every single need, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. remembering that to diversify where you get your needs filled mm-hmm. is very helpful in having a good support system and friends that you can talk to about these things. And And also, like you said, having understanding between the partners is really important too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Ariana, thank you very much for your great conversation with me on my podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa.
And thank you, Sam.
It is a pleasure. And thank you for listening to our podcast. If you would like to speak to or connect with Ariana, I will actually put all her connections or all information in our description so that you can connect with her and listen to her and talk to her and the program she's offering, get in touch with her. I think she's going to be an amazing mentor, coach, I would say a lot of things, trainer, a person who will listen and understand, because we all have somebody to listen to and to go through with our own journey as well. So thank you very much, Ariana, for being my guest on Chai with Sam Dosa.
Thank you.
Have
so
a
much.
Lovely rest of the day.
Baking
in the sun. I'm jealous.
Yes.
I'm really jealous.
Thanks, yeah. It's definitely a lucky thing to have, and I hope that the quality was okay with the sound.
Absolutely
okay.
I think everything was went very well, so thank you once again for being my guest. Speak to you soon.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, speak to you soon. Bye-bye, Sam.